freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Want to give everybody a little heads up. We got some technical difficulties this morning, so we can't hear anything. We are flying blind this morning, but that's okay. So our apologies if a few things go awry. It's going to be interesting with Clayton here in about 15 minutes, but we've got some weird, janky things that we've set up to kind of get through the whole thing. So our apologies in advance. Brock, what a win yesterday, and I'll say this. They had to win that game. I know it's one of 16. I don't like to talk about must-win games in week three of the season. I honestly and truly believe that was a must-win game because win and you're 1-2. You're heading off to face an 0-3 Arizona team that's making a change of quarterback. Great, you got a shot.
Yep.
Lose and you're 0-3, and I honestly start to wonder whether or not this season descends into a mess of epic proportions with guys quitting and Earl becoming an even
guys bigger not deal. Practicing right? Or practicing when they want to practice or just do their own things. You know, a number of different times, Troy and Buck yesterday said desperation, right? That this is desperation time. You watch the NFL, you watch the early games, you see an 0-2 Giants team, right? And they've got to find a way to win. And you looked at these different teams that were 0-4 and put together some of their best efforts of the season, that it's not necessarily a must win, or maybe it's just a fine line between must win and just absolute outright emotional desperation that you just have to bring everything you had. And you were in the building. I was watching that thing at home, and I don't think it was just the 22 starters on the field and everybody that came in on special teams. It sure felt through the broadcast that about 69,000
was loud.
Were as wired in as they have ever been to do just that. Yeah, just give them the emotional juice and energy that team needed.
Well, first of all, it's ridiculous to make them start on the road for two games, and I don't like to make excuses, but I mean that's a starting in Denver and then having to go on the road week two is just a bad deal for them. Fine, whatever. They played like a completely different team yesterday. The offense actually did everything you expected it to do. The defense was continuing to fly all over the place. Why did they win this game, Brock? Yesterday?
Yeah, I'll give you three reasons. I do have to start with that environment. Well, you know, we have seen through the years, through the ups and the downs and the coaching changes and personnel changes, what that home environment in this place can be. Why were Troy and Joe at that game yesterday when he had a full slate of games, some other good ones? They were there because they know that that place, that extra voice in a broadcast of that building is as special as just about any place in the NFL. So I really would put, you know, what those fans did emotionally to the team, some of the advantages that that creates for your defense, the number of times guys got off the ball in such an absolute blast and hurry. It wasn't just Frank Clark. It was all of them that could just feed off of that. I think that is number one. I think number two, they played to the absolute strength of their personnel. You know, we chatted with Herm Friday night, Herm Edwards, at their hotel, and talked about what a player's coach is. And in his mind, all a player's coach is one that says, this is all about you, the players, and not about me and my system. It's not about my system. It's not about what I want to do. It's ultimately about what do you do best. And I thought offensively and defensively, they just played with their schemes, with their calls, and it's highlighted more offensively than it is defensively. But you played to DJ Fluker and J.R. Sweezy and Chris Carson's strengths. You ran the ball, man, and you forced that run. Even if you're running into a wall of people at times, even if you didn't get to the Cowboy linebackers, you forced that run. So you played, I thought, to your player's strength. And then lastly, the D was violent. Okay, that Seahawks defense was just the violent group that came up and hit and smacked and created five sacks and got three more takeaways. And really, they're the ones, when you play a home game, that can just plug into, maybe unlike our signal this morning, right, between us and our building. That defense is the group that plugs into that juice in the place. And Jaron Reed played his best game as a Seahawk. Kivius Mingo played one of his best games in the NFL, right? That group, Bradley McDougald, again, played a great game. Earl was in the right spot. Bobby Wagner is in the man in the middle. That group all played to the strength of the home environment.
Let me put all that together for you. I've got four comparison numbers to for you. Now, as you know, Brock, I'm a numbers guy.
Database.
I mean, I'm a numbers guy. When we come in the morning, you know I'm just spewing
your
numbers.
You're science, you are math, and you are database.
I'm a numbers guy.
It's what you have
guy.
Always been.
All right, I will give you four comparisons that tell the story of this game. You ready?
I'm ready.
Comparison number one. Now, this is not the number you'll see in the box score, but I think it's the actual number. The Seahawks rushed the ball 37 times to compare to 28 passes.
It's awesome.
I know it shows a little different because you got two Russell Wilson runs in there, but I think those were both scrambles.
Yep.
So what you had was 37 real rushes compared to 28 called passes. That is a good ratio, and some of that obviously is because of what you know you have at the end of the game, you're
sure.
running out the clock. But even without that, it's at least even. I mean, that is a great job by Brian Schottenheimer, by the offensive line, by everybody staying on schedule. And you heard Russell even after the game talking about no penalties and how important that was. He's right. Comparison stat number two.
Oh, and by the way, let me just say that 28 was Russell's average the first 5 years of his career. That 28 passing attempts or 4 years when this team was actually a black and blue team. And intimidated in one games, Mike, at the line of scrimmage. Remember, that was exactly the number. That was Troy Aikman's passing attempts per game in his Hall of Fame career on a run-first play defense Dallas team. 28 is very much the sweet spot.
Well, and a lot of those passes were on third down, and that kind of leads to stat number two. The Seahawks were 7 of 16 on third down. Their defense forced the Cowboys to go just 3 of 13.
There you go.
That is a major, major reason you win. Those additional first downs on third where you continue to move the clock, and a bunch of those are Russell Wilson passes. One of them was a dive by the fullback, Brock. They actually ran it on third and short. I didn't even know what to make of all that. That was amazing.
6 rushing first downs, 10 passing first downs. So you still, on that money down, you still have to execute. But, man, is it ever easier 3rd and 2 to 6,
yep.
which is where a huge chunk of those were.
All right, stat number three, comparison stat number
three. I love your databases.
Dude, good this stuff. Is a database and a half.
Clayton should be impressed.
We may not even have Clayton today. He's going to be too intimidated.
Yeah.
Three forced turnovers versus zero turnovers on offense. And obviously that doesn't take a great genius to notice and what a big deal that is. But it's a big big deal.
Yeah, probably 99% in the annals of the NFL. When you go plus three or more, you win. There's some crazy ones where you don't, and fluky things have to happen, and you got to be unbelievable, come back at the end of a game and score three times in the last 5 minutes. But by and large, if you go plus two, plus three, you win in this league. And they know it, and they've been taking away all three games. That's been maybe the most consistent aspect of this team, is they've now gotten the takeaways every single game and multiple.
Earl has three of them?
Yeah, each game, how about that? You've got a guy that's had two picks. Shaq had two picks week two. Bradley had two picks in Denver week one. And yesterday, the ball bounced Earl's way on a couple occasions. So pretty
big
awesome.
Play by Bradley McDougal, obviously, knocking that ball away from Ezekiel Elliott. And that's one of the reasons you win. All right, final comparison stat, Brock.
Okay.
5 sacks for your defense, two against your offense.
Yes.
And one of them really was a weak sack.
That was kind of chump. Didn't he get back to the line?
Yeah, I mean, so really it was one. I mean,
yes.
I understand the stats will say 5-2. It was essentially 5-1.
Yeah, and Dak looked like Russell looked last week in Chicago. Dak never looked comfortable. He got thrown around like a rag doll. His feet are moving all over the place. He's in very little rhythm, right? Your defense and that constant just pressure and attack and havoc. And I'd add Frank Clark played one of his best games as a Seahawk, too. You know, he got 3 sacks now in 3 different games. You know, I told you my number. What did I say my number was? It was over 10 for him. But he's basically $1 million a sack, and he played with his hair on fire. That whole group did. And that's not a bad Dallas O-line. That still has a couple pieces. They're missing their voice in the middle, and you took advantage. And you hit, you harassed, you hurried him.
You
made him.
Good?
What's that?
You know who's been good?
Huh?
Ken Norton. He's had a really good, solid feel for defensive play calling so far, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree with
that. He's gotten some linebackers, Kendricks and Kalitro, up and ready to play on time.
Yeah.
He's got a young secondary that he's got working in pretty
good rhythm. Not giving up the big play.
No, I mean, you got to like what you got from Trey Flowers once again. I mean, geez.
A couple cool blitzes early. There was actually a little more pressure early to kind of set the tone. And, hey, you had a lead.
For all the
and
conversation.
And it's kind of nice to have a little lead to play with,
everyone's
too.
Everyone's Brian Schottenheimer this. And, I think the jury's still out there. But, man, through three games, I would say Ken Norton has been almost the hidden star so far for this Seahawks coaching staff.
Well, you wanted to get back to your roots. You wanted to get back to who and how you built this thing originally. And yesterday was a reminder to, I think, all of us that, you know, get to talk about it and all of you that get to cheer about it. Yesterday sure felt like the good old days at CenturyLink.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, Seahawks beat the Cowboys 24-13 yesterday. It's their first win of the season, and I could actually feel the wind blowing as everyone in Seattle let out a collective, whew. Chris Carson, man, rushing for 102 yards on 30.
Yeah, where's that on your database, dude?
Earl Thomas became the story after the game, obviously. I'll let you focus on Earl because I think you're more impassioned about it. I was much happier to just see them run the ball. Just give the ball to Chris Carson, who is good enough to be a number one back. It was 102 yards. It was very nearly another 50 if he could have turned the corner on a few more. I thought he had a really, really good game, and a couple of those runs really made it. Certainly scoring a touchdown by a running back inside the red zone for the first time in like 2 years. Yeah, that was pretty good. I thought the 10-yard run he had to seal it was pretty darn good, but it was more just the effort. Just keep feeding them the rock. And they gave it to him over and over and over and over again. He delivered.
Well, we'll talk to the head coach here in a couple hours, and I'm sure he's going to be in pretty good spirits because that was a get back to the very DNA of what this formula was built on, and that is to wreak havoc and be physical and violent defensively to take the ball away. And they have done that all three games, right? It is to win the line of scrimmage. And, man, they did that yesterday, and it's a good Dallas team, and you have to be committed to doing it. And then ultimately play off the 69,000 in that building. And I thought through 60 minutes of that game, it never waned whatsoever. You all, you 12s, you may have went into that game with a little bit of nervous energy, didn't know what it would look like, but I thought that they played a huge impact in it. And of course, okay, the ball is just going to go to the way of number 29.
Right.
It's going to hit off of a foot, and it's going to land right in his lap. Bobby's going to collapse on a little check down, and it's going to pop in the air, and there's Earl taking a bow for the Cowboys and for the world to see. And what a conversation it's going to lead to here in about 50 minutes as he continues to make his voice known as well.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the Huskies hold on for a 27-20 win over Arizona State on Saturday night. Jake Browning, certainly his best game of the season so far. 68% of his passes complete, 3 touchdowns, and no picks. That's what the Huskies needed, and they survive a Arizona State team that was not bad. That's not a bad team at all. Meanwhile, Washington State's game-tying field goal attempt with a minute 50 left was blocked, and USC escaped with a 39-36 win. Win in LA.
Yeah, it was nice to see the Huskies get back into playing their kind of ball as well, and not being frantic and not being pushed around, and to see Jake Browning look like he did his first couple years. He was a playmaker. He was a difference maker. It was an NFL-style game, and you heard Bob Wischus and I say that a number of times over the 60 minutes on Montlake, that this is going to come down to the fourth quarter. It's going to come down to some of the execution of these quarterbacks, and where Manny Wilkins missed a couple of his shots down the field, Jake Browning did not. Should have easily had another one. Another touchdown there that Quentin Pounds could not have dropped in. That's the Jake Browning that this team has to count on. And frankly, Mike, that's the Jake Browning that Coach Peterson and Bush Hamden looked into our eyes in our meetings on Friday and said, why don't you guys get it? He is our guy. He is the unquestioned voice and leader of this team. And I thought he played to that way Saturday night. As far as the Cougs, man, they outplayed USC. It just felt like they outplayed USC at every single turn. Other than, unfortunately, a red zone possession at the end where they run it a couple times, they get their kick blocked, and USC finds a way to win.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the Mariners were eliminated from playoff contention after they lost 2 out of 3 games in Texas over the weekend. Brock, I'm getting closer and closer, and I think maybe tomorrow when we have some more time, Thursday. We'll have a little bit more of an autopsy report on what happened and where this team goes from here. But I think they're down to just a few choices for the offseason. I think they've really narrowed this thing to 3. And I know all teams have only so many choices, but really you can do 1 of 3 things. You can sell everything and attempt to rebuild this thing. You can buy and go out there and spend a tremendous amount of money and try to bring in enough pitching and East pitching and a couple of other big name players to try to complement what you have and give this thing another go, but by spending more money. Or you can continue to just kind of work around the margins, which is what Jerry, you know, tinker, which is what Jerry DePoto's done the last few years. I'm not a real big fan of number three. Quite frankly, I don't know that I would do number two. And I don't know where they have the stomach for number one, but I think it's probably what they should do.
Yeah, and this is it. You know, seven games here in the final 7 days of the season. And you watched last night, at least I did, and it was awesome to see Adam Simber come in a money situation, the ninth inning with Cleveland and Boston last night. Obviously, a friend of the show, his dad works in our building. Adam was awesome. But just the intensity of these playoffs, man, with Houston and with Boston and with Cleveland. And if you just sit back, Mike, and evaluate it, and you look at those teams, you look at your team, you realize there's a way to go. That I think of just playing in the margins and being out on the edges, if you just look at the best teams in the league, this should never be about just getting to a wild card game. It should be, how do you build your team to compete with the Bostons and the Houstons that aren't going anywhere with their personnel? I think those are the, you know, the tough decisions, and there's going to be a bunch of them going to have to be made this offseason.
All right, there you go. You can listen to the show here on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Again, sorry, having some technical difficulties, which may have thrown me for a loop there for a moment or so. But let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, what's going on with Earl?
Who knows?
What do you mean, who knows?
Nobody knows. You think even Earl knows? I mean, nobody. There's no answers to the question because it could go so many different ways. I mean, there were so many things going on during the game. Of course, you know, we're out there early trying to see if Earl was going to pop in there because nobody knew for sure if he was going to be at the game. Then, you know, he's in there. After the game, you saw how he was talking about, hey, I'm going to protect my body. I'm not going to practice if I'm not 100%, you know, trying to preserve everything. But he played great. That's the weird part about it. He just played so great that, you know, they have tough decisions to try to make. I know there were so many little byplays going on as the game was in the pregame because I know that, as he was saying, some coaches came over to him from the Cowboys and said, you ready for the trade tomorrow? So at least talking to sources, I don't know if they're going to be willing to offer a second-round pick at this stage at 1-2. I don't know if they're still ready to make some kind of a trade, but it could be a trade. It could be Earl still staying with the team, Earl not practicing with the team, as they're now calling it a hold-in, not a hold-out, but a hold-in. Who knows?
You think there's any contract that these two sides, if the Seahawks were to say, you know what, he kind of showed us once again, he is a pretty special talent. And by the way, there's other special talents on this defense, and Shaq and Bradley have played just as good, if not better, than Earl, frankly, in the back end of the defense. But do you think there's any middle ground that these two sides, that they say, okay, let's be reasonable, and let's see if we can get something actually done here. Do you think the two sides could ever meet in the middle with a contract in Seattle?
My guess would be no, and the reason it would be more is probably going to be more Earl, because the price, I would think, for fairness, is $13 million, just a little bit above Eric Berry, what he's making in Kansas City, and my guess would be Earl wants much, much more than that. And if that's going to be the case, there's no middle ground. You can see that Earl's taking a very hard tact on this. But again, to his credit, he's playing great. He's playing team ball. He's putting everything out on the field. But you know, to do that, I think he's probably asking for much more than the $13 million.
Can you continue to have a player not practice on your team even while he's healthy?
Probably not. I think it's going to be too much of a distraction. I guess in the case, you can maybe say yeah, because Marshawn Lynch didn't necessarily practice all the time that they wanted him to, and the players respected him. And I think you go around the locker room and you talk to the players, Earl Thomas does have that respect. The players want him on their side, and so I guess maybe you can get by with that. But boy, it's okay when you win, but when you lose, that's where the problem comes in. And okay, so that's where I think that could be, you know, very problematic and probably should lead to a trade.
And it's okay when the ball bounces your way, John, but then when you bust a coverage and Ezekiel Elliott runs down the sidelines and you're very fortunate that his foot is 6 inches out of bounds,
yeah.
When he's your guy to cover, it's going to be fascinating to watch as this thing plays. I don't think an easy answer. Here's a tougher question for you. Who was the single best player on that field as you watched yesterday?
Well, I think you have to look at Bradley McDougal doing such a great job. I mean, he has had just an amazing start to his season, both in coverage, his ability to run downfield and make that Ezekiel Elliott play, you know, to be able to analyze things, his ability to communicate. I have been really impressed by McDougal. So I think that would be one. Then, you know, I think you take kind of the wild card in this one, which would be the interior of the offensive line. Think about this. They had 60% change in the offensive line. DJ Fluker making his first start. Joey Hunt doing great with communication at center. And then here's J.R. Sweezy making his first start at left guard in his career. And they sealed everything off. They did a great job blocking. And so I thought the offensive line probably deserves a lot of credit. And even though it didn't go great for average, I think you have to give a lot to Chris Carson. I mean, Chris Carson seemed to get a yard or two just about after every different run with his ability to just kind of push and push and push. I really thought he did a good job. But what I thought you saw the Seahawk team that was supposed to be there, the Seahawk team that was missing for the first two games.
All right, let's buzz around the rest of the NFL here for a moment, just stay in the division. What's going on in San Francisco? Both Richard Sherman and Jimmy Garoppolo taking off.
Well, Jimmy Garoppolo's out for the season with an ACL tear, and I would venture to say that would take at least 5 points a game off of them. So if they were considered to be a 24-25 point offense, now they're down to 18 or 19. They're not going to the playoffs. They're not going to live up to where they are and where people thought they were going to be. Don't know as far as how bad it is on Richard Sherman, but it did not look good. He suffered a calf injury, and things were so bad that he had to be escorted off the field with two people trying to help him. Not just one, but two people trying to help him because he couldn't put too much weight on that calf. So that could be very concerning. They got injuries at the other cornerback position. You know, they already got Jarrett McKinnon out for the season. They almost lost Matt Breida, the one remaining running back. He suffered a knee injury, but they thought maybe it could have been bad, but he was able to come back in the game. They are in tough shape.
Arizona benches Bradford after a couple picks and a fumble, and are we looking at Josh Rosen time this Sunday down in the desert?
Maybe. I mean, that seems to be the way the trend is going right now. When things go bad with your $20 million starter or $15 million starter, you go to the young guy. But as poorly as they're playing, I don't know if it's going to really help as much because, you know, it's not like Josh Rosen didn't come in and make his own mistakes. And so, you know, I think they're going to be a little bit more cautious on it. But at 0-3 and the fact that they blew a game, particularly in that second half to Arizona, they're in bad shape, and I don't know if he's going to start or not, but he's got to be a consideration.
Do we know anything about this league right now when Detroit waxes the Patriots and Buffalo waxes Minnesota this weekend?
What I know is that there's no great teams. I guess you can maybe say that there's three that stand out, but I don't know if you're going to be buying the Miami Dolphins at 3-0. I mean, the two teams that right now you would say are the best in football are Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and his 13 touchdowns and the Los Angeles Rams with their 3-0 record. But look what they have coming up. You know, the Rams have the dreaded three-game road trip where they have to go through, and that usually is very damaging to a team. And then after that, I think they've got Green Bay at home, and then they've got another tough road game in New Orleans. That's going to be very difficult. And then I think you look at the Chiefs, they've got tough road games coming up because they've got Denver coming up next Monday night. So there's basically no real great team in the league. I guess you can maybe put the Rams and the Chiefs on the side, but then the Chiefs have no defense. So, you know, watch out there.
I was talking over you earlier, just last thing on Earl. Do you think that there is still a trade possibility?
I still think there is, yeah. I mean, I don't know how strong it is, and I think they'd have to make a decision that they would have to accept less value. You know, there's mixed reports on the Dallas number two offer, but the fact that now it's a shorter season, you know, would they still be willing to go a number two, or do they go to a number three? I think there is interest there, and I think they need him because, I mean, if you looked at yesterday, you know, Xavier Woods is not 100% coming off his hamstring at free safety. They're clearly now a cover one, cover three type of team thanks to Chris Richard. And then, you know, they had both their other safeties hurt at different points of the game. I mean, I think they need Earl. I think if there's one regret that maybe Jerry Jones might have is not making the trade earlier for Earl Thomas.
I don't know, man. I get what you're saying. On the other hand, I watched that game, and unless Earl's planning on playing wide receiver at an elite level, I mean, if they got no weaponry at all. You mentioned it a million times in the offseason. They don't have a good offense, really. And so, like, I get that they might want a safety, but man.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Their needs are not necessarily more in the safety position. Their needs are more on wide receiver and tight end.
John, great stuff, as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
John Clayton with us every single morning at 7:15. Always fun, especially after a game. Brock, we got to get into this. What the heck do you do with Earl Thomas? This is the ultimate long-lasting and perfect storm of questions that face an NFL coach and GM. We'll ask them together next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
A single setback. Prescott looks, throws a rifle. Ball is picked off. Earl is coming back the other way. 40. Turns upfield 35-30. Now cuts back to the middle of the field. Makes one man miss and is dropped at the 29-yard line.
Of course Earl Thomas had the pick to start things off. Of course Earl had another one later. Of course they were both tip balls. Of course the guy that he left alone for a touchdown accidentally stepped out of bounds by 6 inches before scoring. And of course Earl would mouth off after the game. Brock, what in the world do you do with Earl Thomas now? It's a great win for the Seahawks yesterday, and it sets up the rest of this season, man. You're going to 0-3 Arizona next week, where they're making possibly a quarterback change. Mm-hmm. You were right in the thick of it, man. I mean, like Minnesota losing, and there are a lot of ways for you to still make the playoffs this year, even after starting 0-2. But what in the world do you do now with Earl Thomas, who decided last week, yeah, I just don't want to practice. Yeah, I'm good. This happened after we got off the air on Friday, where Earl was just like, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I don't feel like it. I don't feel like practicing, so I'm good. What do you do?
Did you add in he was the leading tackler, too? He and Bobby had 7 tackles. Did you throw that one into the mix as he was actually flying around and making plays? Here's the one thing I don't do, and I'm sorry, Jake Heaps, Amina Kimes, and many others that I love and respect out there. I don't open the pocketbook up and pay him what he wants.
Everybody out there wants you to pay him what he wants now.
So you think if you put out a little Twitter poll right now, you think that it would change that much? There would be such a what is it, recency bias?
He has 4 picks in 3 games.
He has 4 or 3. He has 3 picks in 3 games, right? You think that there would be such a recency bias that just give him whatever he wants right now, and you would forget.
Yes.
You would forget, and you would just wash away what's happening all around you. You know, is the guy that raised a 12th man flag whose body was just a little bit beat up yesterday.
And you man, do I have to do this?
And
did do I have he to ever, do everything for
and
you?
And did he ever raise it? So what would I do? I wouldn't pay him. And I guess I would continue to do this dance and hope I would find some middle ground and say, Earl, I would really love for you to practice for our team. I really would. I think it benefits us. I think it benefits you. I don't think any of this helps whoever, and if a trade partner comes along to see that you're willing to sit
in. Cut 7. Brock, it doesn't matter what you say. Earl's not all that interested in practicing.
Yeah, I need to make sure my body is, 100. And I'm investing myself. Now, if they was investing in me, I'll be out there practicing. But if I feel like anything, I don't give a damn if it's small. I got a headache. I'm not practicing. But I don't want that to be taken the wrong way. I know I'm going to get fined. But that's just where I'm at with that.
Oh, he's beautiful, man. He is beautifully ours in Seattle, too. Earl, you're making $500,000 a game, all right? You're not making minimum wage. They have already paid you. They're asking you to play out this contract. That's their terms. That's what it's going to be. You're going to make $8.5 million this year. Still one of the five highest paid safeties. And then after this year, let's all see and figure it out. And, oh, by the way, for the last 6 months, we've tried to trade you. I mean, we've tried to show you respect back in January, February, March, April in the market. Not only is our market and our budget closed, the rest of the market, as of now in this trade wins, is also closed. And I just don't know how it helps you as an employee to just shut it down. Right? I don't know. And maybe, heck, I was wrong with Khalil Mack. I didn't think somebody, A, I didn't think Oakland would trade him, and B, I didn't think someone would give 2 firsts. But the market changes, man. The market can absolutely change.
The poll is out at the Mike Salk if you want to vote on this. Pay him or trade him. Those are the only options I'm giving you. Letting him play out the rest of the year is just not an option right now. Pay him or trade him. Recency bias check really is what this is. Yep. A couple of weeks ago, where was this at? Do you remember? It was like 60-40 or 70-30.
Oh, I think it was even higher than that to trade him.
You think it was 80-20?
Oh, I thought it was. He was holding out, and he was just an absolute no-show through all of OTAs and minicamp and even into training camp.
Okay.
I thought it was higher than that.
Well, as of right now, in very early voting, 60-40 says pay him.
Yeah, pay him. Pay him, man. He got 3 picks. He got 3 picks in 3 games. Right? You know who's outplayed Earl is Bradley McDougal.
Well, no one's saying you should get rid of him either.
No, and actually, I would put Shaq Griffin probably, who's got more responsibility or just as much. I think Shaq Griffin has played just as good, if not better, than Earl as well. Do you pay all of them? You know, do you just rip up Bradley's deal and say, yeah, I know we signed you to a 3-year, $12 million deal, but you're actually playing at a whole lot higher level. Let's rip this thing up and let's pay you the $10 million a year, because I'm sure after three games, you're looking at it, you're the highest graded safety in Pro Football Focus. Why don't we just pay you? It just doesn't work that way. It's just not reality. But Earl doesn't live in reality. He never has. He never will. It's part of the beauty of why he is a Hall of Fame caliber player. He thinks he's, you know, 10 foot tall as well and could do and is bulletproof and invincible. And therein is some of just, you know, some of what you walk in this building.
Can you coach a team, Brock, where one guy says what he just said, I'm not practicing, and then play him on the games?
Oh.
Can you do that as a coach when he is as talented as he is, when he's one of the best players on your team? Can you run an operation where one guy does that without everyone else getting upset?
I mean, you know that I'm a son of a coach. I can't do that. Mike, I can't just show up at 7 a.m. I'm just out. I'm not doing any homework. I'm out, but you'll see me at 7 a.m.
I know that you can.
I can't do it, so it's not in my wiring to do.
The question is, as a coach, as a manager, as a person in charge, can you allow someone to do that?
They are. They are allowing
it. Well, they did. That doesn't mean they are.
They are. They are allowing it. They are when he stepped in week number one when you were still 0-0, and here you go.
And are the players mad? I mean, I heard Bradley McDougal shouting, pay that man, while he was talking.
Yep, players are. Yep, I think you got to be very, very careful to get the opinion of players. I think players.
I'm not saying the players get the opinion on pay him or trade him,
yep,
but players may give you the opinion on whether or not it bothers them that he's not practicing like that.
Yep.
Can he practice and not play well? Or, I'm sorry, can he not practice and play well? Like, can that be a consistent thing in the NFL where you don't practice?
He was even asked about that yesterday. Do you have that cut, Kyle? That was one of his questions about practice, and he's like, No, you gotta practice. I made my game on practice. Like, I know the importance of practice,
like,
but
I won't play as well, but
but
practice
that was,
is a big deal. Practice is a big deal. In my younger days, like, it made me who I am. I always practice hard, but I understand now, like, especially I'm gonna be careful with myself.
It was then, but it's not now. So for this young team that's resetting, you all practice. Do what I say, not as I do. Does that ever work well in life? I don't know. Does it over the long term? I can't imagine this being sustainable and over the long term. And frankly, I'll ask you a question since you're asking a bunch of impossible ones my way. Well, but I love
it. I got more for you. Is he going to be on the Seahawks tomorrow? Is this thing getting done today? I mean, it sure looked like yesterday he might be heading home with the Cowboys.
Yep.
You got the Chiefs reportedly interested. You've heard now that the Falcons have lost two safeties maybe for the year, and they're a contender. I mean, there's some teams that should have some interest in Earl Thomas. Is he going to be a Seahawk tomorrow?
I think if there was a reasonable deal to be done, I think they would have talked. I don't think he's reasonable. I tweeted that out last night and got some blowback. Like, how do you know it's silly money? Well, all I know is this guy does not think of himself as anything but the very best safety in the history of this league. So to think that he's going to take second fiddle in any money to anybody, and as entrenched as he is in that opinion right now, he's not. And there is no way that as I look, and even poor Richard yesterday goes down, and whether it's going to be the Achilles again or a heel that kept him out all week or a calf or whatever, you have just seen this. These bodies break down.
You do have to pay attention to the fact that Richard Sherman was carted off yet again, that Cliff Averill's nowhere to be seen, and Cam Chancellor's raising the 12th man flag yesterday instead of playing in the game.
And while they're 29...
These third contracts are challenging.
And while they're 29, much like Felix is not your normal 30-something-year-old because of the wear and tear, this unbelievable run for 5 years where they played another season plus, where he's already come back from a broken leg, where he's already come back from a torn labrum, where last year he battled soft tissue injuries throughout the course of the season with practice. And, yeah, it's all about him.
55-45 right now. 55% of you out there say, pay the man his money. We'll get back
beautiful
to this, I promise, throughout the course of the morning. Coming up next, a little Coors Light's Blue 42. The O-line was different, but was it better? Brock's got an answer next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
The Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42!
Blue 42 to the...
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42. We do this every day at 7:45. Kind of fun after what was mostly a winning weekend for football teams here in the Washington. Brock, let's start here with the Huskies.
Yeah.
We had the game on Saturday night up close and personal. Most encouraging and discouraging aspect of that one?
The most encouraging was Jake. There's simply no question about it. And I really wish that you and Howdy, Kyle wouldn't want to have been there. You and Howdy and Lydia could have sat in the meeting with Chris Peterson, who met with us, met with the broadcast team for the first time as a Husky coach on a Friday. And it was such a big deal. Come on. It was not a big deal at all. But it was great he did it, you know, with us. And I think he'll continue to do so. He always makes himself available earlier in the week, but he was great. I wish you could have been in there when I asked him the question of, I'll give you one guy to go into the octagon against one Sun Devil to tap out. Who is it? And he stared at Allison and I and just like this look I don't think I've ever seen on him before. And he's like, Jake. It's Jake. Of course it's Jake.
Which Jake?
Yeah, Jake Browning.
Oh.
Not Mr. Hayner or the other Jakes. No, it's Jake Browning because he knows the guy's got incredible guts. And with the game still in... you know, close and in mind in the fourth quarter on a little rollout that he didn't have to take this kind of shot. He did to really seal the deal for a Saturday night.
Browning to throw. As all day. Extending the play. Back in the end zone. Kane Otten. Touchdown.
And that was a moment of truth, as I said on the broadcast, because it wasn't wide open. You had a corner guarding the guy on the sidelines and a linebacker right there in the end zone. And do you want to throw that Ben Roethlisberger, Santonio Moss, in the one spot, you know, where your guy's going to get nobody else. If he underthrows it and he risks an interception there, up only 7, but he's not thinking that way. He pulled the trigger and Jake played his best game of the season. The most discouraging was the voice of the place wasn't as loud and as intimidating as I thought it would, well, it could be, and certainly as I remembered it. You know, there were some empty patches. It's late. It's 7:30. Folks left after they took the 2-touchdown lead in that fourth quarter, and it just didn't have some of the voice that I know it has, that it had a couple years ago against Stanford on a Friday night, right? A little bit earlier kick. I get all of that. But to have that presence, the presence of the 68,000, Salky, that you felt from beginning to end in CenturyLink Field, they're going to have it. When Stanford rolls in, even BYU Saturday night, there's got to be a little bit more juice in that building. It will help that defense even more in their pass rush. And to me, that was one of the more disappointing aspects.
All right, question number two. What happened at the end of the game for the Cougs? Did Mike Leach not get aggressive? Like, it was a strange way to end that final drive.
Yeah, I'm going to stand by this. I think even Gardner Minshew, as Kyle was telling me before the show, pointed out, much like Luke Falk's got a lot of control at the line of scrimmage, those were not Mike Leach's back-to-back run calls. That those are going to be the quarterback's opportunity there. A quarterback who, by the way, got hit in the ear hole harder than Jake Browning got hit in that Auburn game week one. And for the life of me, I don't understand, A, on the field if you miss it, but B, and I'll say it again like I did against, you know, the UW and Auburn. Every single play is reviewed in college football. It's not a coach that throws a red flag out and says, uh-oh, replay booth, take a look at this. Every single play, the 3 or 4 old-timers up in the replay booth are looking for anything and everything. And that's a catch, that's a fumble, that's a turnover. That is a targeting on every play. So not only do they miss it in live action, to not see the Porter Gustin launch right into the jaw, it is as clear a targeting call as you could ever have. And did that leave him loopy, who all of a sudden checks to the next play another run on 3rd and 6? It very well may have. And it's unfortunate because that kid was awesome. And Wazoo's offense was awesome. And Mike Leach called a fantastic game and had USC reeling really from beginning to end. But unfortunately, couldn't execute in the final minutes where that game was ultimately decided.
All right, question number 3, and we'll get back to the Seahawks here. All kinds of changes on that offensive line. One of my favorite things was watching DJ Fluker run out of the tunnel, man. I was worried for him. Don't fall. He played a down without a shoe. I could see it from where we were. His shoe is like...
it's a size 28.
His shoe has to be the size of my leg from knee to the bottom.
It's a 22, foot. So right. Yes.
Don't you think that's pretty, about from my foot to my knee?
Pretty close.
It's like... That's his shoe.
Yes.
How'd that offensive line play?
They play gritty and tough. The tape is not going to be the prettiest. They didn't get to linebacker Sean Lee, and those linebackers were flying all over the place. But it reminded me a little bit. Do you remember years and years and years ago, the 49ers had not had a 100-yard rusher against? And they were some bad boys in their front. Patrick Willis and Justin Smith, they were some bad boys. And the mindset was, okay, we're not going to try to do this textbook. We're not going to try to have these beautiful combo blocks and get to these backers, but we're going to mash right at the point of attack so at least the line's moving forward. And therefore, Marshawn, push the pile. And I thought that was some of the mentality yesterday. The J.R. Sweezy at this stage of his career knows what he is and isn't. Fluker knows what he is and isn't. And God bless you, little Joey Hunt. You know what you are and what you're not. And those guys on double teams just stayed, and they pushed, and they scratched, and they mauled, and they got enough movement. So, as Clayton said, Carson was constantly falling forward. And then, because you committed so wholeheartedly to that run, when the game was on the line and you had to get a first down in the four-minute drill, this happened.
Russell takes the shotgun snap. He's going to hand off one more time to Carson. Starts right, left, comes back right. Stiff arms a man, tries to get outside. Fights his way out there. He may get to the first down. Going to be close. Brown on the far side says Chris Carson got there. Man, oh man, what a run by Chris Carson. An 11-yard gain.
And you'll see the same kind of movement right at the point. Those D tackles were not in the backfield making any tackles, right? Those linebackers, sure, they shot gaps and they got to the line of scrimmage and they hit Carson a bunch at zero or one, but oftentimes he fell forward. And guess what? Second and seven, I can call another run. And I can get to third and three or four, and then, you know what, even then I can call a run, or I can get to a conservative slant or a little flat route or a little hitch route, and we move the chains and keep on going. So I thought Fluker, Sweezy, Hunt, they weren't spectacular. You're not going to see Pro Football Focus with amazing grades for any of them, but the mindset of win at the point of attack, of mash and maul and set the table for your young buck to run for 100 yards, they did their job.
That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. And Brock, it's pretty incredible. We've been sitting here now for almost a full hour, and the name, the two names really, that dominated almost every minute of conversation last week, we have yet to mention. I promise that will change next. I'm Brock and Salk.